Welcome to this technical difficult version of the Movie Vault, where we are sharing a mic because our other two mics aren't working, which is just like the Vietnam War in a way, in a sense. It's kind of like it a little bit because there's a lot of difficulties, and that's pretty much the only comparison, I guess. Today we watched the 1986 movie. Wait, 86? Yes, I believe so. 86 movie, Platoon, directed by Oliver Stone. And it stars Willem Dafoe and Charlie Sheen and a bunch of other people like Johnny Depp and Forest Whitaker and John C. McGinley and Keith Daniel and Kevin Dillon and Tom Berenger. All of people who sound familiar. This movie was about a platoon, as you might have been able to guess, in the Vietnam War, and the division between the platoon, the infighting between the platoon, how the platoon operated, some different events that happened to the platoon, and things that they had to go through, some things they did that were bad, and some things that happened to them that were bad, and everything in between. So with that, I'll pass it over to Zach for his first reaction or his initial reaction to this movie.
Whoa. That's my first reaction. No, it was great. I think I said to Ben, I'm on a Willem Dafoe kick right now. Maybe. But, yeah, it was good. And Ben didn't know that Willem was in this, but that's all right. The, like you said, 18 times, the platoon itself is what this story is about. And it's nice because compared to the other three Vietnam movies that we watched, which are Full Metal Jacket, Apocalypse Now, and The Deer Hunter, but we've only reviewed The Deer Hunter. Between all those, this is the most war-y movie, and it really does focus on the war more than those three movies. So I appreciated that, but I also, you know, it's not my favorite. It's probably my fourth of the four. Is it the fourth of the four for you? Or yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, but it was still pretty good. I think it was great in general. The actors were pretty good. Charlie Sheen, I have never seen besides in 2 and a Half Men. Wasn't that him? Yeah. And that was like such a different role compared to this. Willem Dafoe, like, he's so old in this. He's very, like, he's a very good looking guy. And he's kept that same exact face and gap between his front two teeth since he was little. And it's great. Yeah, Forest Whitaker's great. You know, Johnny Depp, we didn't even realize who it was until the end, but it was good. And then, yeah, I think overall it was just kind of like, this is like what it actually looks like to be in the middle of a war, what it is to experience it, what it is to have highs and lows, but mainly lows. And then what do people have to psychologically do to get through these circumstances? Specifically, like, what games do you have to play in your head and what mental gymnastics do you have to do to get to the point where you're doing some of these terrible things? Not everyone does them, but, you know, people rally between these two characters of, what is it? What are the two names? Barnes is one of them. Barnes has like the scars on his face. Elias, that's right. And you got these two personalities. You got, you know, Elias is like the good one, right? And then Barnes is like the bad one. And Barnes is like just killing people on the whim and just doing all these terrible things. And yeah, and then Elias calls him out and they hate each other. And you got half the platoon split on each side. So yeah, how we can go in that.
Right, because really the story of the movie is the characters within this platoon. And it really, like, the Vietnam War was a large thing. It obviously impacted the whole country. I think there was a draft for the Vietnam War. And on top of that, so we get to see, like, who are the types of people who end up fighting in the war. And what are their feelings about the war. And, you know, sort of, like, as they are more involved in the war, like what is brought out of them. Like you kind of see, like, it reduces people to who they actually were maybe before they started the war, but kept hidden. Now you just can see it. Like, it's plain to everyone. There's one particular character, named Bunny, who is sort of like, probably even like if he had command and over everyone and it wasn't Barnes, like, he makes Barnes probably look kind of like, a little bit more measured because, Bunny, he was the one who, like, wanted to, like, kill everyone, basically. Like, anybody he saw. And he loved it. He, like, he was begging, like, the commanders at all times to just, like, kill anybody he could get an opportunity to. So he was sort of like the worst among them. And everyone was kind of like, they were a little standoffish when they were around him. They're like, I don't want to be like around this guy. He like gives me like a bad read. And of course they see the things he does too. But he's obviously aligned with Barnes. And then there's this sort of like weed smoking group that's around Elias, more of the people who are like, well, we're stuck here, we might as well have a good time. But also Elias kind of circles, like, I guess he's kind of under there, they're all under his leadership, and he's kind of leading them in a direction like, I have experience here, and I want to show you how to do things the right way, quote unquote, even though they are in a war, so it's often difficult to read what the right way is. But what Elias is very clear on is that the right way is not mass murdering people and burning down a village. Even though the burning down the village part, he doesn't have a lot of control over, but the killing people without any just cause or anything like that, no trials, nothing. It's like judge, jury, executioner style, and basically then massacring and decimating like villagers who were caught in the crossfire between the Vietnamese army, or the NVA, I think they called them, and the U.S. Army. So that was pretty crazy to see. Mm-hmm. The movie sort of has, it starts with the main character, Charlie Sheen. That's not his name in the movie. What is it? Taylor is his name in the movie. And he's green. He's a new part. He's new in the war. And he actually volunteered, which is crazy. People are like, why would you volunteer for this? And we see him progress and become more and more experienced. He comes under the guidance of Elias, and even though initially he's more attracted to Barnes, but as soon as he smokes weed, that's when he's with Elias. But also he can see, not just that, but he can also see the moral difference between the two characters. Barnes sees himself as a pragmatic, like, realist who's like, well, this is just what we have to do, and if a few innocent people get killed along the way, so be it. Whereas Elias is, as Barnes describes him, is a crusader, which is a little bit ironic of a title, because the crusaders might have actually been more like Barnes than they were like Elias. But that's neither here nor there. But Elias was seen as somebody who tried to keep his morals in a war, which the pragmatic people would say you can't do that because it'll divide people, which it did. But does that justify Barnes's position just because some people didn't agree with Elias? That was the question. Eventually, Elias and Barnes are put in a situation where they're alone together, and Barnes shoots him and thinks that he kills him, and he tells Taylor this. Then they're flying over and they see that Elias is still alive. So then Taylor has further evidence that Barnes probably shot him instead of trying to help him. Which Elias was actually, you know, he was shooting a bunch of people on his own. And he was very impressive in his fighting. So they lost a good man who was actually helping them, but it wasn't worth it because of the potential court martialing that Barnes would have seen due to the eyewitness account that Elias could have brought forth against him when it came to shooting a villager, specifically a woman, as he was accusing her husband of being a spy or working with the NVA. So is it the complex kind of like, I have to sacrifice this guy to keep my job? At the end of the movie, everyone gets ravaged by a complete onslaught of the NVA who just completely surround them. There's bombs going off. Everyone's fighting for themselves. And eventually, Taylor, is somehow still alive at the end of the fray. And then Barnes is also still alive because there's this whole thing about like Barnes not dying, like he can't die. He has scars all over his face. He's, you know, and he doesn't die. And at this point, Taylor decides, I'm not going to let this guy live anymore. He takes matters into his own hand and kills him, which is another interesting moral discussion to have, because it was pretty, it was a blatant, like, defenseless person killing. Like, of course he was basing it on the idea that Barnes had done wrong, but he still killed him, like, in cold blood. And then he goes to be rescued, and there's kind of like a monologue. He's been writing to his grandma the whole time too, which is sweet. you know. but we see his whole journey, and he's leaving Vietnam, and he kind of is like, well, it's my job now, after seeing all this darkness and experiencing depravity and doing things that were wrong, to like make the best out of life and search for goodness. And that's basically all he's left with at the end of the movie as he flies away in the helicopter. All right, Zach, what does it all mean?
Well, after looking up what it means, I have found that, and I agree with this, it's definitely about harsh realities of war. Of course it is. It's Platoon. But it's about really what everybody has in this movie is a different perspective, right? You have your main character. He goes in, you know, not excited, but he's like worn out a couple weeks in. You know, he's got a lot of days left on this job, and he's got a long road ahead of him, and he's already like completely beaten down. And then you got these other characters that are like already into it. You know, they're okay with killing here and there. And then you have some other characters that love to kill, like Bunny, you said. And then you have, you know, you have your big icons like Elias and Barnes. So I think what you take out of this is like, in the war, there really wasn't a right and wrong from most of the people. You know, there wasn't, you know, this is just how the movie depicts it, at least. It was that there were lots of terrible things that went wrong just because power was given in the hands of people who didn't have morals. They didn't have any right. They didn't have any wrong. And people like Barnes, for example, you know, they have these psychopathic tendencies that really do get them promotions. And it's like, you see how someone could be so successful for being a killer like that, and for actually making their identity off of that. And then also you have on the other side someone like Elias that's like, they're in there because they first believed in the cause. It wasn't because they had nowhere else to go. I don't feel like he had nowhere to go. But most people are in there because they just need something to do. Like they're the rejects, the outcasts, as they said. In fact, the draft was for people who were a lot in lower economic class for most of the time. And, you know, there were millions and millions of people drafted, but a lot of times you could pay your way out, which that's why they were surprised that the main Charlie Sheen was there. And it was cool, though. It was good. It was nice to see the different perspectives and clashing, and especially since, like, I don't know if Elias would have killed Barnes, but I know for sure that Barnes at some point was going to kill Elias or try to. And then he did, and I was like, okay, well, now he's going to either get away with it or not. And obviously he kind of gets away with it, but his demise was pretty soon after. But it was interesting to see that, like, it's from the perspective of someone who's possibly neutral, someone who admired Barnes at first, someone who began to grow to like Elias, just like us, who probably didn't really know who anyone was coming into this movie, and thinking, like, who do I trust, who do I not trust, and stuff like that. So it does give a good good main character protagonist. And then at the end of the war, it really does mix your emotions. What is right, what is wrong? But you can feel some of these gut punches with some of these Vietnamese people, like getting shot, getting kicked, getting bruised, and just beaten senselessly for no apparent reason. Sometimes they're just going in and wrecking these places. They burnt their village. There's no reason to burn any of the villages or to shoot that lady that was talking, or that one disabled guy to shoot near his feet and push him and gush his brains out.
Was that the main character you did that?
No, that was someone else. But he was shooting his feet, but someone else killed him.
Oh, the main character.
Yeah, Charlie Sheen shot his feet, but okay. Someone else killed him. But it was just like, it really does gut your emotions. And then at the end of the movie, I was thinking to myself, like, who am I rooting for? I have these protagonists in front of me trying to kill these Vietnamese people. But I'm like, I don't know if I want them to win. You know, I'm like, I realize as part of a movie, I'm trying to discover, like, does my internal psyche actually want them to win? And I was like, you know, I don't know. It's a movie. We'll see. But, you know, obviously, there's no winner. It's everybody loses, it seems like. And it seems like everybody just goes home dead, sad, or lonely. I don't know. So, you know, even the one guy who had something to go back to was given the command over the second platoon and wasn't able to go home. So it does give, like, overall my thoughts were it's a perspective movie. It's all about showing through actions that, and lots of actions, because it's mainly just actions instead of plot, which we talked about, but showing different perspectives on the war. And obviously, I think all these movies are pretty much against the war, like maybe not the whole part of the war, but most of the war and everything that went down, at least. So, yeah.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Zach on most of those things. I think you can look at the individual characters and you can kind of get different, like, lessons from each of the characters. I think to King. He was one of the major characters, and he actually got to leave right before the major battle at the end, where a lot of people died. And he, I remember him telling Chris Taylor, who's the main character, "It's all gravy. It's all gravy after you get back." It's like the war was so intense, and it was so likely that, or there was such a high chance that you might die or have a really bad injury, that like anything, if you can just make it out, everything after that in your life is just gravy, because like you shouldn't have made it back, which is pretty crazy to think about, like somebody just being that on, like that honest, like. But that was what was getting most people through the year or whatever that they served, was just the fact that they might get out. And they weren't going to go back to somewhere that was really exciting. He was mentioning all of these towns. He's like, towns nobody ever heard of. I was pretty happy that I had heard of one of the towns, but I hadn't heard any of the other ones. And it was Brandon, Mississippi. I've heard of it. It was just interesting. I got so proud of myself, I forgot what I was saying. It was just interesting to see it, like how the people were getting themselves through the war, and how like even though their where they were going back to would be so insignificant to most people, that was actually what was getting them through. Although Bonnie was like, "I love it here." He might not have liked to leave, because it was like, "I love it here. I can do whatever I want. There's nobody to tell me to tell me that I can't do something, and I can just." You know, he is a psychopath, so he's just like, he just lets any like feeling just take hold of him. Because I mean, that's what happens when Chris Taylor shoots the guy and says, "Dance." I forget what the line is. I feel like that was probably one of the most famous like scenes in the movie, because I was like, I feel like I've seen this scene, and you're like, how did, like, how did he let himself get to this point that he was doing this? And then you see Bonnie, and he's like, it's not enough. Like, it wasn't enough just to mess with him. This one-legged disabled guy, he just, brutally kills him. Like, doesn't even shoot him, just kills him with blunt force. And it's like, and then that's not even enough. He's like, it's probably the mom. She's probably, like, running this whole operation. And he's just, like, making everything up. They're so frustrated at the army that's attacking them that they're willing to believe any sort of theory that they can come up with in their head that can justify, because they see their fellow members of their platoon die, and they start blaming these deaths on the villagers and start like trying to connect them, and that way their death can like somehow justify the death of the people that they're in the army with. But there might be some people who are like kind of tricking themselves, but if some people were being honest with themselves, it was just, they just have a lust for blood, and they just have developed it over the war. I mean, Bunny literally said, "Have you ever seen brains like that? Have you ever seen," like he said, "I've never seen a head." And it was like a joyous, like, it was like, if this guy, maybe he would have never developed this like bloodlust had he not gone to war, but it would be like, you would expect like a serial killer or something to say, "What are you saying?" But he's like somebody who's in the army, who's supposed to be like the good guys, like the US. They're supposed to be the people protecting everyone. I mean, that's the whole point of this war. They're trying to keep communism from spreading, and here they are like murdering people. I would love to learn more about the Vietnam War to see like, just, I mean, I don't know whether these are like isolated incidents. Obviously, they didn't happen in areas where it was easy to document them, or people weren't admitting to them necessarily. So we may never know how many of these types of things happened, or whether they happened like this. But like, if this is what was going on, it's definitely like heartbreaking and just sad to think about like how the whole like goal of the war just like diminished. And then you think about the fact that all these people are like, we're going to go home and be heroes. And we all know that they went home and everyone treated them badly. Because they assumed that everyone was participating in stuff like this. So even the people who were like excited about being treated like heroes when they got home, that wasn't the life that was going to be back for them. So overall, it was like, yeah, you get to see a picture of what happened during the war. You don't get to see any of the PTSD after. You don't get to see how people's lives were before they went into the war, like we do in The Deer Hunter. There's no drill sergeants or anything like in Full Metal Jacket, and there's not like a total descent into insanity, although there are, I would say there are some similarities between Marlon Brando's character in Apocalypse Now and Barnes in this movie. Yeah. But Barnes is more like is still believing in his cause as being associated with the army, whereas Marlon Brando's character was more of like, I'm setting up my own society because I'm like moved on from the war, basically. So it's a little different, but there's still some of that like loss of like humanity almost, and just complete like focus on a mission without any regards to any morals.
No, I agree. I mean, as I look more into it, the more that what you just said is true. You know, it's kind of like you have these good and evil people, Elias and I'm on the right side. Elias and Barnes, and they're kind of like trying to sway Taylor to one side or the other. And it kind of doesn't, you know, it's not directly that way, but it seems that way. It's, you know, who do you go for? But I want to read the last quote, and then we can get into the philosophy of the movie, I think. So the last thing that Taylor says in the helicopter is, he says, "Looking back, we did not fight the enemy. We fought ourselves." And then he says, "There are times since I felt like like the child born of those two fathers. But be that as it may, those of us who did make it have an obligation to build again, to teach others what we know, and to try with what's left for of our lives to find a goodness and meaning to this life." So, you know, you might think, yes, obviously he's been narrating this entire movie, but this one actually is in the present tense. This one's not in a letter form to his grandmother. So this one, I think, has a deeper meaning to the whole thing of the movie, not just because I looked it up and it says that, but also it did stick out to me. You know, he says it's almost like he's saying that we need to tell other people what happened here so that it doesn't happen again. That's what it seems like he's saying, right? What do you think?
I agree. It's like the people who made it out, like, he's like, well, we have a responsibility. I mean, it's not likely that everyone was going to be convicted of war crimes. Some people may have been. So a lot of people are going to go back to their actual life and then just have like memories of all this stuff. Because even if you didn't actively participate, if you saw this going on and you didn't do anything about it, you would feel like a passive participant in it at the very least. So it would definitely have like when people develop PTSD and stuff, just like seeing this stuff would definitely affect you. And so then it's like, well, I have to like right my wrongs, kind of, which in a sense is like a little bit, when it comes down to philosophy, like if this is what Oliver Stone was trying to leave us with, like it's a little bit flawed because there's not really anything that you could do that would make up necessarily for the wrongs that you did, just like anybody else, who does wrongs, even if they're not like this, and maybe affect like human life directly as much as the Vietnam War did, but nothing that they were going to do is necessarily going to, other than I do understand the idea that like you, like when it comes to the philosophy of the wars in the future, which I think the Vietnam War, I might be pulling at things, but I think this was like sort of the first time that like people saw guerrilla warfare on like a massive stage, and it really changed how like the US could like do things, because guerrilla warfare gives an advantage to the side that cares the least about human life, which is why it, like all of these guys like Barnes get dragged into not caring about human life, because guerrilla warfare it's based on surprise, it's based on taking prisoners, it's based on different things, and a lot of those things, like the ethics, any ethical standards that people had for war, like if there's any honor in war, it like kind of dissipates, because eventually that gets into like terrorism in the future, and we had a lot of the recent wars have been based on the idea of like eradicating terrorism, so we've kind of moved on from eradicating communism to eradicating terrorism, and terrorism is essentially guerrilla warfare. But it's not even guerrilla warfare, it's like, well, I guess it's terrorism is what it is, but it's like, it's definitely predicated on the idea of like killing innocent people in order to get a reaction or like strike fear into the hearts of the enemy. And if you have a moral standard that says, well, I can't do that back, like, but then again, you're like, well, what do we do? Like, what is the army doing when they attack other countries? They're like bombing stuff, and like inevitably innocent people get caught in the crossfires of that. So it's definitely a tough like subject, and that's where we just talk ourselves into these circles, because that's kind of the point of this film, of just how difficult it is. You want to be able to create like a strong moral stance as to how you should deal with war, but then you realize, like, you start saying things and you're like, well, now I kind of sound like some of the people in this movie if I were to support that. But then you're like, do you just stay back in your country and build walls around it and just are on the defense? Some people would say so. Other people would say that you have to protect other people in other countries if you have the possibility to. And so, yeah. And I don't want to keep rambling, so I'll let Zach take the mic now.
Oh, thank you. Perfect transition to me. No, yeah, that's fair. I think it's fair. I think another thing is, it was, you know, we talk about how the internet changed everything and everything, you know, the internet wasn't there, but just the idea of communicating things that would have been hidden otherwise, you know, you have these, all these wars in the past, you know, people didn't document things like they do today. People didn't know about these things because there weren't, you know, now we have security cameras. Now we have iPhones. We can literally look up Google Maps and find any, like, we take Google Maps for granted. That's crazy. Think about that. That's one of the best inventions for humans. And we take it for granted. Like, you can literally look anywhere. And anyway, but yeah, so you don't have all these, you know, you don't have this flow of information going everywhere. But with this specific war, just in general, even just thinking outside of these four movies, or Platoon, I guess we're reviewing Platoon, whatever. But there was just this mediatization of, and politicization, is that how you say it, of this war very quickly. You know, just like you think of now, we have COVID, we have all these Democrat, Republican, everything. Everything just gets so political very fast. This was like one of the first big spikes in that type of thing. You know, you had obviously different things like the Cold War, and you had a lot of stuff since then, but still, this war was like a big deal at the time. This is when the protesters would, you know, first made their signs and did all those things, you know. And I think it did change how people look at war in general. I think now, after this war, people are more cynical about the government, the war in general. You know, before that, people, you know, trusted the government relatively, you know, besides the few mole men under the streets. But you still had some faith in your government. And now this war, so highly publicized, political, you got your hippies saying peace, you know, we need peace rather than war. And then you got your nuclear families. I don't know what else. Nuclear families being like, no, it's okay. Let them go. But but now it's like, if this war were to happen again today, think about how many things would come out. Like, celebrities can't get away with anything anymore. Okay, they used to be, like, I'm sure all the celebrities in the past at least did something bad, one thing bad that they never got caught for. Now, so they do something and everything's all over the internet. So it's like, you really can't get away with anything anymore, which is good. It's good. Yeah. It's also super annoying, and it's hard to decipher everything, and it's hard to filter in our brains all this flow of information all at once, especially when we're trusting media sources to filter them for us because we can't do it ourselves, you know? So then it's like, now the power went from the government and having military, and like these military powers are the strongest thing. Now it's like the puppeteers are the media companies controlling these governments and like swaying, because public opinion does put the people in offices that make these decisions, that make influence these policies for, or mandatory budgets for military stuff like that. You know, you got even colonels and surgeon generals have to be like viewed highly in the public, you know? So it's like, you really do see a shift of this power from these high, maybe educated government officials to these non-educated media CNN reporters. And that's just not, it's everywhere. It's not just CNN. And it really was like, there are a lot of effects that it had, but to me, that seems like the biggest one that has such a profound effect today, where anyone listening to this is obviously thinking about like the media companies now, and how nobody, like even the dumbest people in America, still are like somewhat have to be skeptical of these media sources, because they obviously, if they trust one, they can't trust the other. There's no logic in going from one to the next. You can't, I promise you, nobody in America goes to CNN and then goes to Fox and then amalgamates in their head what would be the truth, okay? Because that's just not possible. So it is cool to see how this movie does portray that a little bit. Not, it doesn't really portray it in like that. It's saying, you know, there was a hint of like, he's like, I'm an Article 15, you guys, you know? So you got these laws and bylaws in these wars. But to me, that's what the Vietnam War did after. I'm kind of culminating all four movies in my head. And this movie was strictly warfare, which was nice. It was a nice refresher, even though it's terrible and disgusting and horrible to watch. It was a nice palate cleanser.
Yeah. And I'm even just looking at like the how this film was made. And I guess apparently The Deer Hunter and Apocalypse Now came out. So then film companies were like, well, why do we even need to make this movie? Like, we already made these two movies. They're already the best. And the Vietnam War is hugely unpopular, so why do we revisit this, like, if we don't have to? And I guess Oliver Stone convinced somebody to do it. He was friends with the guy who directed The Deer Hunter, Michael Cimino or whatever his name is. So there's that, like, so there's obviously still some resistance because there's such a, like, stain, even almost 20 years probably after the war happened, like, of the effect that this had on people and just like the bad negative feelings that were attached with it. Well, it's interesting. I was in Indianapolis and I took a picture of a monument that was about the Vietnam War.
Are you gonna show the camera?
I'm not going to show the camera. I was going to read. I haven't even read what's on the monument, but they have in Indianapolis, they have a very nice, they have a huge, in the circle of the downtown, they have a huge monument to the veterans of Vietnam. And or not the veterans of Vietnam, the veterans, I think just anybody. No, it's a Civil War monument. The one in downtown is Civil War. And then a little outside of the very central part, there's like a mini, like, you know, Washington, D.C., how they have all the monuments. It's like a mini version of that, but it's only for Indiana veterans. So there's like a monument for every war. And so the Vietnam one was here, and it's just like a letter. And it said, well, I don't know that I'll read this whole thing. No, that I read, it's pretty long. But it's interesting,
read a portion.
I'll read a portion. We'll see how interesting it is. On January 31, 1968, the Viet Cong and North Vietnamese launched a surprise offensive throughout the South Vietnam during Tet, the Lunar New Year celebration, in treacherous violation of a ceasefire. Even though the American and South Vietnam forces would recover from the setback suffered during the Tet Offensive, a war-weary President Johnson decided not to pursue the subsequent military advantage. On March 31, 1968, he announced he would not seek re-election, but he would devote himself entirely to ending the Vietnam War. Richard Nixon assumed presidency in 1969 and pursued a policy of Vietnamization, or gradually turning the war over to the South Vietnamese. So basically they're trying to get out. So this is crazy because it says the ceasefire never actually was implemented. They were trying to implement a ceasefire, and that's in this other paragraph. And they overran South Vietnam in 1978. Saigon fell in 1975, bringing an end to 25 year of American involvement through. And so basically this was just bad for the South Vietnamese. I was at in Indianapolis, actually heard one of the speakers who spoke at the conference I was at was from Vietnam, and his family actually fled after Saigon fell in 1975, and they barely made it out of there. And it was crazy to just like hear the story of how like terrible it was and how they almost didn't make it onto a boat into America, and then just like how devastating that was for his family. Even though they were able to find a life in the U.S., it was like a hard life because his father was affected by the war and didn't treat them well, and there was all kinds of brokenness that occurred because of what had happened in Vietnam. So that's like the reason why the U.S. would be like, well, we should have stayed, but then Saigon might have fallen anyway. So based on how the war was going, so there was a interesting part in the movie where Willem Dafoe's character Elias kind of says, well, we've beaten so many people, it's time for us to get beaten. And that's a bit like the U.S. was used to up to this point winning like every war that they were in, or at least, you know, bringing it to a treaty, like the American Revolution and War of 1812, Sure, there were some other wars.
Civil War, everybody won.
Civil War. I guess the country wasn't divided, so technically the right side won then, even though that was the deadliest war and tons of people died. The deadliest war by like the amount of people in the U.S. that died. And then eventually there was the World War One and World War Two, both of which the U.S. came out on the winning side. And then after this, the Vietnam is a Korean War, Vietnam War, we start to see more like stalemates or like nothing really happened, even though we were involved in this. So that's a brief history lesson from two people who don't know that much about history. but it's, you could see the effects everywhere that's why there's four movies you can point to and be like, these are the four Vietnam, like. They couldn't just make one movie. They had to make four of them. And there's more. I mean, Oliver Stone made two more movies about the Vietnam War. That's how much he cared about. And if you look at Oliver Stone's filmography, he like makes movies about like every historical event. He's like made a movie about JFK, about Nixon, about George W. Bush. I mean, this guy, just, this is what he does. He loves political stuff. And now he's like, he even goes on like, I don't know if you've ever listened to Lex Fridman, but he's been on Lex Fridman's podcast talking about, he's very interested in like the Russian-Ukrainian, like Russian politics and that sort of thing. So anyway, it's a very fascinating subject, and you want to like be able to have the position where you're like, well, I feel bad for the troops. I also am angry at the troops that participated in the bad stuff, and just sad for the people who like ended up with PTSD and their life was kind of like ruined by this war that they were forced to be in, kind of like through the draft. And there's just like, there's so many losers. It's even hard to keep track of like how many people you should like feel bad for in the whole thing. And just, it just shows the devastation of war, and maybe takes away any of the, like, World War II had a more obvious like enemy and it was easier to get behind like, and like celebrate everyone as heroes, whereas this and we know, like, if you looked at the reality of the war, it was ugly and disgusting, just like this most of the time. But instead of like glorifying any sort of war, like movies like Platoon kind of just show it like for what it is, which is just like the result of the brokenness of humans and how messy and that becomes.
So I have a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. He says, then came the buildup in Vietnam, and I watched this program broken and eviscerated as if it were some idle political plaything of a society gone mad on war. And I knew that America would never invest the necessary funds or energies in rehabilitation of its poor so long as adventures like Vietnam continued to draw men and skills and money like some demonic destructive suction tube. So I was increasingly compelled to see the war as an enemy of the poor and to attack it as such. So, I mean, obviously, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., he's, you know, political figure of the past. He did have an affair with his wife, so he's not a saint, okay? I'll tell you that. But that was April 4th, 1967. the speech in New York City. And, you know, I don't know. I really wasn't there. These movies aren't films. Like, they aren't documentaries of the war.
They may not be historically accurate at all.
But I know Oliver Stone wasn't he in the war? So please look that up while I'm thinking so I don't look stupid. But I know some of these people that have worked on these movies have strong feelings about it that they were a part of it. Yeah, he was. So Oliver Stone's writing this
he got a purple heart.
Yeah, he was shot. And he made this to show the world kind of what actually went down and kind of his feelings, regrets, and what he thinks America or the world should do moving forward. So, you know, if I'm going to trust anything about the Vietnam War, it's going to be from someone who was there, obviously. I know people in my life who were in the Vietnam War who very much support the war, you know. I also know people in my life who were in the war who very much hated the war, when they were there and now, even more now probably, now that more things have come out. It's so hard for me to not trust someone and trust someone else. And that's not just me copying out. That's me utterly confused right now. But all I know is some of these things are true. And some bad, terrible things did go down. And this isn't a, this podcast isn't a commentary on wars. I wish it was. That'd be fun. But no, if we can trust anyone, it's MLK. I'm just joking. No. Yeah, it's tough. And it's also tough to say when it's going to be recorded and put on Spotify. But yeah, there were some terrible things that went down. Killings that shouldn't have happened. Disrespecting cultures, not just like cultural appropriation, because that's not as important as killing and slapping and shooting and even just some pillaging, and you can understand some worse things that could go down as well. But yeah, so I think that's the point of this movie. I don't know if there would be a deeper point than we need to make sure that this gets out so that there isn't any other wars like this. But then you got to think, why did the U.S. go into this war in the first place? And that's the real question, okay? You know, Ho Chi Minh, was he part of a Chinese conspiracy? I don't know. I wasn't him or there. I wasn't alive, in fact. So it's hard to know. And he wasn't. Like, looking back, he wasn't. But in that time, would I have known that? I don't know. But as an American citizen in a nuclear family probably back then, and just, you know, sitting around watching a black and white TV, even though their color was around, I was poor. And you know, listening to the Movie Vault podcast still, because that's just how it works. And I listen to this, I would probably not know much about it because the wars before weren't publicized, like I said. So it's like, I don't want to like call everyone the devil. Although those, like, Barnes was a terrible person. He was terrible. If there's a real Barnes out there, that was absolutely terrible. If there's a real bunny out there, and not from Pulp Fiction or a real bunny. Or Frank from Donnie Darko, like the bunny from this movie. Then that's just, and I'm just saying things now because it's just getting in my head. But now it's like, what do we do with this movie? I don't know. I don't know what Oliver Stone wants me to do with this movie. Okay, what am I gonna do? Like, as an audience, that's what I was thinking. Like, I'm not the target audience. Okay, I think the target audience are people who are in the war, maybe, or people who are around people who are in the war. I'm not really in that, but I'm not also copping out. You know, I feel like our generation is pretty good at calling people out, and not calling ourselves out, but calling other people out. So I think we have a few more safeguards, but also, like, there are some evil, evil, evil people in our generation and in the world right now that could definitely do this, you know? And it only takes one Hitler to rally people around and get people to do things on massive global scales. So yeah.
Yeah, I think like it's hard to like say whether there's a comparison like in the modern day, because like I feel like we're still in a state of confusion. And like Zach was bringing up, like, why did the U.S. even go into this? And I was just thinking, like, I have no idea. And then I also thought, like, well, I didn't have any idea, but if I was a soldier going into the Vietnam War, I also may have no idea why we were fighting the war. Like, I was just like, got drafted and sent here, and this is what we're doing. And I know that the Vietnamese are the enemy, or the Northern Vietnamese, like, not all the Vietnamese were the enemy, which might be, that might alone might have confused some people. They might have started equating all Vietnamese people with being the enemy, which is bad and could have led to a lot of bad things. But yeah, so any point that they were, like, it was just, it became this micro thing. It did become all about your platoon. Like, it was, like, about fighting for the people. Everything that, like, war is, like, shown to be, it's shown to, like, show brotherhood. And I don't know. I don't know if that's actually what, like, there's, like, a sort of a glamorized version of what the army and what going to the war is. And then there's, like, what it actually is. And a lot of times I've heard, like, going to the army is kind of just, like, yeah, you might get close to some people, but it's a lot of people who, like, didn't. And this is not, maybe I shouldn't even say that because I've had no personal experience, but some people may go into the army with, like, they don't have a lot of direction, and so you can kind of feel like you're a loner amongst a group of other loners. But it is all dependent on the people that you end up actually with. So you may end up with a group of people that is really good, and it's a really bonding experience, and you may end up with another group that's not like that at all. But it certainly raises questions as to, like, how foreign policy should work, or what the incentives behind foreign policy are. Nowadays, it's so easy to be cynical about every single war, like, but then you're like, well, I do want to feel bad for the people who are, like, who are being, you know, attacked. Like, you see wars happen in other countries, and you're like, well, there's like aggressors a lot of times, and there's people who are like trying to defend their homeland, and so it's tempting to try to be like, well, we should get involved in that. But then it's like seeing wars like this, you're like, well, but do we just make everything worse when we come in? Like, it does it actually, like, as seeing the U.S. as like some sort of sort of UN type figure, except for it's a country. Like, you have, like, the U.S. I'm sure came into with some incentives as to keep Vietnam, other than other than just an ideological, like, we don't want to allow communism to spread. I mean, the Northern Vietnamese army was getting support from China and Russia, I believe, so, which were at this point the enemies of the U.S. And it's a little afraid, but they kind of still are, in a sense, like, in terms of like world powers. So there was some of that, like, bigger scale conflict going on too within this smaller war, and we still see that today. So nothing's really changed, but hopefully some of it, there's still been wars with lots of atrocities. I mean, the war in the Balkans, I've learned a little bit about, and there was so, it was so horrible, like so many deaths, and there's been other wars in other countries where there's been so many deaths, and so that definitely has not changed. It's just like the specific aspect of like how the U.S. decides to get involved in wars. I feel like there's arguments can be made that we've made some adjustments, and then arguments to be made that like we're kind of like still doing the same thing. But when it all comes down to it, I don't really know, and I don't really have any good solid answers. And if I said any of them, somebody could probably come up with a pretty good response and say you're wrong on like every single point that I say. So I won't do that. I'll just leave this as like just sort of a thinking out loud segment as we delve into like probably a more serious topic than we normally cover on the podcast.
Yeah. So closing thoughts specifically about the movie, not about war. I think the acting was pretty good. You know, we can go back to the lighthearted things. The acting was pretty good. I think Charlie Sheen nailed it way better than he was in Two and a Half Men. And I've only seen 2.5 episodes. So and it's also, I feel like, a nod to Apocalypse Now, because it's what's his dad's name?
Martin
Sheen's son. I don't know how I forgot that. And then you got Whitaker, and you got Dafoe, and all these other actors. I think there wasn't really anyone that was bad in acting in general. But I think you don't really get a super deep. You kind of get like some funny moments here and there, but mainly they're just straight face. So I don't think it took a lot out of them. To be honest, it probably took a lot, like physically, to do all those scenes, because a lot of them were practical effects. But yeah, so I mean, props to them, but also just the directing, the style, the music, the sound, the score—it was just great. And I liked that in the fight scenes that there was no music, and it was just shots, because they want you to be immersed in it, and it was kind of nice to be like, oh, I'm in the bunker with them. Well, it's not nice. It's like, oh man, this is getting immersive. I'd stop, you know, stop being immersive. But the. So yeah, it was good. The like a lot of the gunshots, it showed everything. So it would like show, like like them just like flailing when they're getting shot or stabbed or something like that. I appreciated that, because a lot of times it's like it'll show their back, or it'll show like the camera will show like the person shooting them, and it won't even show the person getting shot. So a lot of the effects made it seem like, oh yeah, this is really bloody, this is really gory, violent, just a terrible time. Nobody's having a good time, of course, and I also liked that the internal struggle within the platoon, I think, was the right way to go. I think if you're going to add anything to the Vietnam War plethora of movies, that it would be a specific thing, you know, that displays a moral conundrum or a moral stance. So he gave specific characters with specific circumstances and a specific platoon to show the larger ideas and themes of the Vietnam War that he believed in as one who was there. So Oliver Stone did a great job. I don't know if I've seen what else does Oliver Stone have? Anything good? No, I'm just joking. I know he does a lot.
He's made a lot of movies.
But he so yeah, I think particularly Defoe's and Barnes's Natural Born Killers and JFK, yeah.
He wrote Scarface.
Okay. Oh yeah, that's cool. Scarface.
The last movie he made was Snowden.
That's 2016. So he hasn't made one in a while. But Yeah, I think particularly having those two ideological characters, those weren't characters, those were ideologies in flesh. I think it, to have those in the movie, and then to have Taylor, this deep emotional character who actually is trying to care about a cause.
He interviewed Vladimir Putin.
Oh, he did? He interviewed Putin.
In four-part, four-hour television series.
Wow. 2015, 2017. Oliver Stone, okay. He's really getting into the political, geopolitical film fields. But yeah, it was good because then you can see the people who defend the war misrepresented in Barnes, and then the people who are against the war represented pretty well in Defoe. And like, I also think it's like he leaves some part up to interpretation as to there are specific people in the war who were trying to do the right thing, whether or not they realized that they were doing either the wrong thing or being, and yeah, I don't even know if I could say neutral. I don't know. But yeah, so the morals, it's just a tornado. So I feel like that was a good thing that he displayed, Stone, through the screenwriting and the acting and just the way that the score was, and then these two ideologies that came together. So yeah, I think the culmination of all of those really displayed like this portrait of, man, like what are we doing? That's like the thesis is what I was like, man, what are we doing here? Is what Taylor's thoughts would have been.
Yeah, I think my final thoughts, I completely agree with the acting. I think you make a really good point about the goriness. Like, I can just think of so many scenes that were just like probably there was a couple moments that were among like one of the more difficult like things to witness. Like, the guy gets blown up, his both arms shot off his body, are off his body. There's lots of explosions. Just like feel like very visceral react, like and realistic reactions to being shot, like shock, you know. But then also the lack of empathy that comes along with it, because you're like, people are still fighting in the war, and they're like, well, just take the pain. Like, they don't want people to be making a lot of noise. But they're also like, get a medic, and you're like, who is this medic who's like going around to everyone? Like, there's got to be only a couple of them. So, and the amount of people that are like getting shot, everyone's always just like, get a medic. And they're just like, these are just like regular people, and they're basically doing like what a emergency responder would be doing on, you know, people who are have among the worst injuries that you could probably get anywhere, just like gunshot wounds, and they're doing the best they can. So, but then some people are like thankful to be shot if it's just a smaller wound or wounded a little bit, because you get to go to the hospital and you don't have to be in the war. So it's a little bit of a matter of perspective. Yep. There's a guy who stabbed himself in the leg. And then there was a moment where, probably the most difficult moment was, Barnes put his gun up to a little girl and was going to shoot her. It had not Elias come, and that you were like, they're really going to like, that was pretty like crazy, but also sad to realize that like that may have actually been a situation that occurred. So yeah, just showing the moral greatness, the moral badness was clearly shown, and then the moral greatness was shown, and not a lot of like goodness was necessarily shown, because like Zach said, everyone was pretty much caught up in this. So that was the right direction to go for Stone. This, I don't know, based on his other movies, I'm guessing this is probably one of his better ones. Like, I don't know, he just started like making movies about like every cultural event. He made a movie about the World Trade Center like 5 years after 9/11, which is always a like sort of interesting thing to do, like maybe let things have a little bit more time. I know there's probably a couple movies that at least that were made about the World Trade Center tragedy. But this guy has basically become like a figure in, yeah, like geopolitics. So that's fascinating. Like, making movies about these things does give you some amount of influence, and people start to view you as sort of like an expert, because you have to do, I guess, just the research and stuff that you have to do. And that's kind of who he's become. So for better or for worse, that's who Oliver Stone is. And this movie, it seemed like the perfect like type of movie that he should, that he, you know, like basically set his path, I guess, in Hollywood to make more movies. Although he did try to make different types of movies. He even made one about a sports team called Any Given Sunday, which is like I can't imagine that probably turned out that well. I could be wrong. I'm like, this just doesn't seem like, sometimes some people just need to stick to their alley. Like, don't try to do other things. I mean, even Natural Born Killers was probably a little bit different than the other stuff that he ended up doing. He also made a movie about the Doors, the band The Doors. He seemed to like them a lot. He wanted them to make the soundtrack for this movie, but they wouldn't. So he used that one, what, the White Rabbit song by Jefferson Airplane and a couple other songs. So yeah, I liked it a lot. And at the end of the episode, it didn't really seem like there was an appropriate moment to do this in the middle of the episode. Just like to shout out Hedman England Agency. If you would like anything related to car, auto, or business insurance, or car, auto, I keep saying that, auto, home, and business insurance, call 614-486-7300, 614-486-7300, and tell them Ben and Zach sent you. Yes, so I don't know how many other movies we'll end up reviewing about the Vietnam War, but I think Zach and I are going to keep watching war movies. They are something to behold. They allow you to maybe explore a little bit about actual history, although you always have to wonder when they're fictionalized, you're like, or even if they're based on true stories, they're like, you know, they're made into a film. So they're trying to make you feel a certain way. And you're like, it's hard to base your entire opinion on films. Obviously you should know actual history and read actual history books to gain an even better perspective.
Just be there.
Yeah. Or just be there or talk to people who have been there. That might be even better.
No.
Although they can only give you one individual perspective, but that may be the best you can do. So with that, are we ready to close the vault? Yeah, yeah. I don't even know what the... It's just a helicopter flying. It's nothing else. No, it didn't crash. It didn't. The helicopter is still alive. Don't worry.
The helicopter's alive.
Yeah, the helicopter is... It's intact.